Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Alison Rudd, very like Gab Marcotti, only completely different. Thank you for joining us. With me in the studio today are the marvellous Bill Edgar and the supreme James Scowcroft. Don't call him Jamie. And down the line, no one. I don't like down the lines. Later, we will be discussing the enigma, or if you prefer, the entity, that is Jose Mourinho. But first, two very similar, if very different, 2-1 defeats for big London clubs. Let's turn first to Selhurst Park, which was rocking on Saturday as Crystal Palace defeated Chelsea, the champions. It was a privilege to be there, chaps. Afterwards, the first question was about the return from injury of Wilfried Zaha. Roy Hodgson wasn't keen to make it all about him. He stressed that it was a team performance, although later in the what we call the Monday huddle, he was prepared to talk about what a remarkable player he is and how instrumental he was in the victory. But let's talk about Wilfried first. Used to play for England, well, in friendlies. Turned his back, thought he wouldn't get a place in Gareth Southgate's team. But after watching him play on Saturday and the way he tore into Chelsea's back three, if you were the England manager, wouldn't you be thinking, oh, we've let him slip through our fingers, he'd be so useful in Russia, James?
I think they have let him slip through his fingers, and I think Gareth Southgate, apparently the story goes back to the 21s when I think Wilfried Zaha didn't really feel he was treated that great by Gareth, really, so he decided to turn his back and go to the Ivory Coast, really. So the Ivory Coast's gain is England's loss. I think he's a player that we lack in England. Watching England play now, I think technical, the level is getting better, but we miss that, those game changers. And Wilfried Zaha, like you'd have seen on Saturday, Alison, is a game changer. He's exciting, he gets people off his seats, he can score goals. He can play in numerous positions down the middle as a number 10 on both left and right sides. And I think he will be. I think he would have played for England, and I think he would have had a nice little England career.
Bill, if you were Roy Hodgson, what would you do? It was you know, needs must. He played 4-4-2, which was brave. It was also the right thing to do. So Townsend and Zaha played as strikers, but with an absolutely free role. They could drift as wide or get together as closely as they liked. They were allowed to do what they wanted. And Hodgson admitted that, and Zaha admitted that. We're going forward, when you've got Benteke fit, would you persevere with this? Or is this just a one-off tactic that suits playing against a rather sluggish and distracted Chelsea? Would you build on that? Is this the future for Palace staying up?
Well, the ideal is if they have a centre forward there, but really at the moment they've not got a centre forward they can rely on, and Benteke's not done enough. And there's not too much backup behind him. So as it stands, they've got two really potentially great players, two players who have been top four standard on their day. By that I mean kind of Champions League standard, Wilfred Zaha and Andros Townsend. So, and it worked perfectly well on Saturday with the two of them up front, but sort of moving to the wings a lot as well. I mean, Zaha is such a, it's a fantastic player. Where he's different from other players, I think, is that he's a great winger, but he's also very powerful. So he can shrug off defenders. He doesn't just need some great skill with his feet, but he's got that. But he's also very strong as well, so he can shrug them off as well. So when he goes into the centre, as he was on Saturday, and he's up against a strapping centre-back, well, he can also cope with that as well.
Yeah, no, Roy said afterwards, when he gave him his England debut in a friendly against Sweden about 5 years ago, he could get pushed off the ball. But he's worked really hard on his physical conditioning.
Well, he was a young lad back then, wasn't he?
Well, he's older, but he's worked on it, he was saying. Yeah. He's worked on not being able to be pushed off.
But naturally he will mature as well. You know, some players are late developers as well. I think down the middle, I saw him play a lot in the Championship for Crystal Palace, down the middle. And he's good out wide, but he can be really effective down the middle. And I think if when Benteke is fit, if you have him, if Palace have him as a focal point and Zaha just in and around him, I think he'll add more goals to his game and more assists.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Palace took it to another level, perhaps, or a more obvious level than Manchester City had in Chelsea's previous game, where City used width and pulled apart Chelsea's back three. Do we think, both of you, do we think Antonio Conte has to rethink his... I mean, he had a light bulb moment last season when he thought three at the back is how I go forward with the players at my disposal, and it made David Luiz look amazing. But they're being pulled apart now by teams that are using width. It suffocates their own wing backs and just makes them look like a sluggish back five, I would argue. Does he have to rethink, or can his 3-4-3 still get him to a top four, top two finish?
Well, I would. They've had two defeats now in a row. I wouldn't panic just yet. I think they should stick with the current system for a while. I mean, obviously on Saturday they had no N'Golo Kanté, such a vital player for them. He's injured. I mean, he can go all around the pitch, filling in any gaps that arise. So I wouldn't be too concerned yet. They have struggled with injuries, and also the suspensions of Gary Cahill and David Luiz. It's meant that the back three have really been unsettled this season, which it wasn't last season. So that's something they've come to terms with. I also feel that they're having won the league and done it so easily, so comfortably, that they're perhaps prioritising the Champions League this year, you know, psychologically, if not anything else. And certainly they're much busier this year because they had only, you know, the league to worry about last time. So tactically, I can't see him changing from three for the time being anyway, but maybe another couple of defeats he'll have to rethink.
I agree with you. I think it's really clear that he's targeting Champions League, and if you compare the attitude of the players when they defeated Atletico to the way they played against City and Palace, it just seems obvious that the priority, even if it's subconscious, is to do well in the Champions League. And he's constantly saying he can't juggle the resources he has for four competitions. It's a bit negative. But if you were Roma, James, wouldn't you just look at the previous two league games? Ignore the Atletico game. Look at the two league games and think, we can stretch Chelsea and inhibit their midfield.
You can do. I think you've got to look at the Man City game as a little bit of a one-off, because Roma won't be anywhere near the technical ability that Man City are.
But Roma would think, well, we're just like, well, we've got to be better than Palace. They're bottom.
Maybe. I think, you know, Chelsea were exceptionally poor at the weekend, and that's every team has an off day. Maybe that was theirs. I think you have to be very, very careful in football if you're prioritising one competition, and that is a cup competition, because if he keeps losing in the league, he might not be around to see out the Champions League. So I think that's a very dangerous ploy. Why, with the 75 professional players they've got on their books, they are short of numbers is baffling. If you look at Tammy Abraham, for example, how he is not in the Chelsea starting 11 at the moment, with Morata being all out, but certainly being on the bench. Yeah, I think the whole
Seriously,
club...
do you think Tammy Abraham's that good? I've seen him play really poorly this season.
Well, I think he's a young lad, and I think he gives Chelsea something that... that they haven't got really, and it is about time that, you know, even to bring him off the bench, would it have been any worse than Mitchie at the weekend?
Sorry. Yeah, well, Batshuayi is a off the bench player. The problem he has is maybe you can explain this because you've come off the bench and you know the difference
a lot.
Well, you know what it feels like, and there are in the history of football there are some players for whom it never quite worked trying to start and being as effective as they can be when they come off the bench. He was hauled off early in the second half. You kind of get the impression if he can avoid it, Conte won't start him again.
I mean, Batshuayi at the moment, he's the only centre-forward with Chelsea. Abraham's obviously on loan at Swansea. So he's the only centre-forward. It's either him or a different system. So, I mean, for a team going for the league, supposedly, it's a pretty poor situation. I mean, Batshuayi, I mean, he won't be able to believe what's happened. Having moved for £33 million, he still hasn't played 90 minutes and he's been there over a year. And he's not been injured at all. And now, the main striker's been injured and he still can't. As you say, he was taken off just before. He couldn't even last an hour. They were behind and they were losing and they took him off. They were with less than an hour gone. So he must be despairing.
But he doesn't... The way he plays doesn't fit like Fabregas. He's got amazing vision. But he needs someone to run for his beautiful... crossfield passing to work, and if you've got a centre forward who isn't looking to make the runs, it just
he was caught
clogs
on his heels.
Yeah,
he was caught on his heels, wasn't he? And I think, you know, Morata is a huge miss for Chelsea. But I just think if Chelsea are challenging to be into the top four, to challenge in the league and in Europe, you need probably three centre forwards in your match day squads at the moment. One to start, maybe two to start, at least one or two off the bench. And the lack of options for a club of Chelsea's size and the infrastructure they have is baffling, really.
Do you think he will recall Tammy Abraham?
I'm not sure he can. Can he?
Can he not do it in January?
I don't know if he can do it in January, but you know, January is another 3 months away. There's a lot of football between now and January.
Do you think he's watching his progress?
I'm sure somebody is.
Well, that's the difference, isn't it? Because Paul Clement is giving Tammy Abraham one-on-one coaching. And he's nurturing him. And that's how he got to sign him on loan in the first place, because he knew him from when he was at Chelsea. And he, of all the options Abraham might have had, maybe Swansea wasn't top of his list, but Paul Clement said, I'll make you a better player. And he gives him time and patience. He's prepared to risk him in games and watch him not do very much and then pick him again, knowing that that will build his confidence. You won't get a Chelsea manager... any Chelsea manager doing that. They can't afford to do that.
Yeah, don't look too much into the coaching. It's the game is the best teacher, and you have to learn. And what we don't give our younger players in this country, we don't give them the opportunity to learn on the job. You know, we all do it in life, whatever your job is, by doing it day in and day out. You learn, and these young players, and Abraham now is learning at Swansea, most importantly, by playing week in, week out.
Well, exactly, but Clement is doing what he said he would do, which is, the key word is patience, I think. He didn't expect him to be Premier League ready, because he wasn't, but he's prepared to say, I've seen what you can do in the Championship, I know what your coaching has been like at Chelsea. I'm not going to say only Swansea, but you can offer a player something much more nurturing at a club like Swansea, even though they're still a club that have to worry about relegation, than you can at Chelsea. I don't know, that seems slightly... To me, that seems slightly perverse. Does it to you?
Well, Swansea don't have that many alternatives. It's not like they're keeping out a couple of top quality, very expensive foreign strikers just to give Abraham a chance. I mean, you know, there's not that much... else beyond him, so they have to give him a chance. And the irony really is that if Abraham was at Chelsea at the moment, that he would be playing a bit. I mean, it's not like it's not as if there had if he moved to Chelsea now, they'd have three big strikers ahead of him. There's literally nothing ahead of him. If he was there from the hour onwards, there's nothing ahead of him at Chelsea, because Morata's injured. Batshuayi they'd given up on after an hour, so he would surely have been playing.
Yeah, fair point. Just a word on Hazard. Seems to me he was exposed slightly as what we term a luxury player, in that without Kante there to fill the gaps, cover his back, just offer him the reassurance that his drifting all over the pitch can work, he was actually more of a hindrance than a help to his team. Am I? Is that stating too far?
He does love to play 1-2s with the strikers there, with Diego Costa and then now with Alvaro Morata, but he just had Batshuayi with him on Saturday. He was, as we've said, has been struggling. So Hazard is such a, he's not a, he's much more of a player who will who link in with short exchange of passes with players. So he needs his teammates to be playing well. Really, that really lifts his game as well. I mean, he certainly, you can't say he's not off form. Certainly with Belgium, he was absolutely brilliant recently, so I don't think that's the issue. I think it's just he needs a good centre forward. He needs Morata back.
Yeah, and I felt he stifled Willian as well, and they sort of got in each other's way a little bit. It was a bit of a mess. Should we just round this up with two very quick answers to two quick questions? Can Palace stay up? Will Chelsea retain the title?
Palace can stay up without doubt. You know, if you look at the players they've got in their side, like Kabay and Zaha, Benteke, more than enough to stay up. Saturday's a huge win for them. They've got three games now. Well, next two games really need to pick more points up. Newcastle away, West Ham at home are two big games for them as well. So they need to try and get some momentum going. I don't think Chelsea can retain the title, no.
I think Palace could certainly stay up, but player for player, they're well ahead of the likes of Brighton and Huddersfield. Yeah. I mean, if they finished, say, ninth, you wouldn't be that surprised at all. At least if we were starting the season now, the fact they've only got 3 points from 8 games means they're having to catch up quite a bit. But even so, unless there's some massive injury crisis, they really should do well. And I think Hodgson's a very good manager. This situation will suit him perfectly well. Chelsea, I thought, one of three teams who could win the title, along with Manchester City and Manchester United. It's looking a bit grim for them now. They're 9 points off Manchester City. As I say, they'd have problems with suspensions and injuries, and they look like they're focusing more on the Champions League. So it's looking very much a long shot for Chelsea now.
Time for Goal of the Week. This season, with your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times, you can watch every highlight and every goal from every game in the Premier League, Champions League, Europa League and the FA Cup. It's just £8 for an 8-week trial. So, James, what was your favourite stroke significant goal of the Premier League weekend?
Well, just sort of touched on in the letter, is significant. It has to be Crystal Palace's first goal of the season. They haven't scored in 7 games. They're just starting to become a bit of a laughing stock. So well, that wasn't really a Crystal Palace goal, was it? First, it was given to Kabay, but I think it was Lupeta OG.
It was.
So I'm going to have to give it. It's great to see them up and running, and it was a huge goal that set them on their way.
Actually, they have officially given it to Azpilicueta, but I thought he hit it off Kabay's shin, didn't he?
He hit it off Kabay-Shin, but then I think it went off Azpilicueta as well. There were 3 quick touches in about a tenth of a second.
Should give it to Kabay.
Yeah.
And Bill, what was your goal of the weekend?
I've gone for one from the Manchester City-Stoke game.
Ooh, which one? There were so many.
Yeah, well, the one I've gone for is there, Manchester City's 6th. That was De Bruyne's 50-yard, 40-yard or so diagonal pass forward leftwards towards Sane, who just right into his stride and knocked into the net. It was one of those passes where, watching on television, you thought, oh, I can't see what the pass is here, and it goes behind Fletcher of Stoke. Then it goes, the ball goes behind Zouma, and you still can't see who it's aimed for. Then it goes behind Cameron, and suddenly, oh, it's for Sane. And you rewind, and 5 seconds before, you realise De Bruyne had already worked this out, and Sane just simply had to run, not even break stride, and just knock it home from 6 yards.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Watford defeated Arsenal. Can be summed up, flippantly perhaps. Arsenal play quite well, take the lead through Per Mertesacker. Looks very happy about it. Marco Silva decides it's all a bit too sweet, brings on Troy Deeney, who decides, I'll go and whack a few people, see if they're up for it or not. Oh, they're not. I'll help Watford just bully Arsenal out of 3 points. Which it is, that is slightly flippant. On the other hand, we have to turn to Troy Deeney, who every outlet he was interviewed by was incredibly honest about it and said, whenever I play Arsenal, I'll go up and think, let me whack the first one and see who wants it. And he decided they didn't. Is this something that possibly a lot of players who face Arsenal think, but they just don't tell us? Or has Troy Deeney uncovered the golden apple and the secret to defeating a posh team?
It's an interesting comment, isn't it? And it's a comment that sometimes a little bit of a no-no between professional footballers. You don't really, although you might think that, you don't go out into the media and say, well, they're a bit soft, they don't fancy it, this, that, and that. Especially at a team like Arsenal, who are a bigger club.
But are you allowed to say, I mean, he'd have been wrong for him to say it beforehand, but for him to say it after it's just happened, isn't that legitimate? He's explaining how they did it.
Well, it's great for, you know, journalists who are there after and want some quotes. It's gold dust, but I don't know, you just have a rule. I looked at it and, you know, this is Troy Deeney. Has he ever played in the Champions League? Has he ever played for a big club like Arsenal?
So you think it's disrespectful?
A little bit, yes, I do.
Even if it's honest?
Oh, it's honest. You can't knock him. It's probably true as well, so...
But isn't it? But if it's honest, that is significant, isn't it? That he's... Cause we,
but we all
we
think
have
a lot
all,
of honest things in life, Alison.
Said, we've all said, in the past, the problem with one of the problems with Arsenal is they just don't seem robust enough.
And that's great from pundits and journalists, but I think in your own profession, do you criticise journalists in your job and openly? You wouldn't do that, would you?
No. I agree. I suppose it's a bit rude. I suppose the one thing in this case is that Arsenal have heard it so often that it would just wash over them. I mean, Sam Allardyce used to say it a lot, and that Arsenal don't like it up them, and quite a few players have said so. It is a bit surprising, really, but I suppose it's got to the stage now where Arsenal just don't really change, and under Wenger they're not really going to change, so you don't think, well, if I say this is going to rile them, and next time they play us they're going to, you know, play differently and much harder. So Deeney just thinks they're just going to be exactly the same. I can say what I want. It also looks quite good on for Deeney himself, in that he's pointing out how clever he was to work out how to beat one of the best teams in England, and this is how he did it. And look, you've all seen it on television, of course. But yeah. I mean, you have to agree with him, really.
Yeah, it's an interesting point you made about normally what would happen, because I've just finished reading Ian Herbert's book on Bob Paisley, and he says in that book that Bob Paisley didn't really know how to give team talks unless he could cut something out of a newspaper and stick it on the dressing room wall if someone had tried to criticise them or just call them out on something. He would encourage he would be very, very happy to see players, managers from other clubs say something just even slightly negative about Liverpool, because that used to form the basis of his team talks. But you're absolutely right, Bill. Do we expect Arsene Wenger to cut out the quote like the one I just read out and stick it on the dressing room wall and tell Arsenal in the next game to be rough, ready, aggressive, show who's boss? I don't think we do expect that, do we, James?
No, I don't think that's Arsene Wenger's style of management, is it? I think he'll sweep it under the carpet like he usually does, really. I think maybe 20 years ago this was understandable, where you could literally rough someone. I'm not quite sure if you told someone to go out and deliberately target someone, you'll end up getting sent off, which isn't big and clever either, really. I think Troy is very honest in what he says. We all think it, but sometimes you have to stay there.
Now, do we think Wenger might get into trouble? He called the penalty decision scandalous. It was when Bellerin supposedly brought down Richarlison, and it looked soft. Although in the game today on Monday, the 16th of October, Mark Clattenburg says it was a penalty and not a dive. Regardless of whether it was or not, and I'd like to know what you thought, do we take Wenger literally when he says scandalous, or do we just feel it's just, he's just plucked an adjective that sounded cross at the time?
I think probably most people equate scandalous with simply terrible, awful, bad, you know, a bad decision, as opposed to
corrupt,
implying that the referee was doing it deliberately.
Watergate or something, yes.
Was it a penalty? Certainly, you know, it's a bit of a grey area. I would say it probably was, because Richarlison got to the ball first, knocked it slightly across the path of Bellerin, who was running back, and then so he followed the ball's new path, as it were, and Bellerin sort of put his leg across that path and they collided. So, I mean, it was very soft, but I would just say it was a penalty, but almost 50-50.
I mean, James, I mean, you could, if you wanted to, you could make a case for Arsenal being unlucky, because on another day that might not have been given as a penalty, quite easily not given, I think, because it was so marginal. And the winning goal, I thought it was offside, because there was a ricochet that came off a Watford player. So the immediate build-up, there was an Watford player offside. So two goals that were marginal. I mean, do you feel Wenger will go back and feel it was just one of those dreadful days where nothing went for us and we played reasonably well? Or is the whole thing an indictment of another season where Arsenal are going to annoy everybody?
Yeah, it happens too often, doesn't it, at Arsenal, for it to be, oh, we're just unlucky, really. Obviously, the penalty decision was a massive factor in the game, and it did change the game, really. But certainly in the last 15 minutes, you know, Arsenal have a lot of questions to be answered, really. We just see it time and time again where they can't. They are fragile at the back and they can't put games to bed. In the middle, they're fine. They'll play some lovely football. But they're now, you know, if you look at them now in the table, they're six. They're already 9 points off Man City as well. It's here we go again for Arsenal, isn't it? And Arsene Wenger.
And read out where Watford are.
Watford are fourth.
Now then, that's the big question. Is this just some mad blip, or can they sustain it, Bill?
Well, as I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, they've done this three times now. They've started really well. Started the season really well since they got promoted in the summer of 2015. And then each time they've fallen away after Christmas, but it hasn't really mattered because they've got enough points already. So it's nothing new in that sense. It's just extraordinary how they have had a new manager. Each summer they've changed manager. They've changed a lot of the players. Yet they've just been able to come up with the goods. I mean, Cleverley's been highlighted, doing well against Arsenal, but Doucouré, I thought, was equally as good in central midfield. Different type of player, much more of a ball winner, Cleverley more creative, and they were really good. And Watford have done it despite having plenty of injuries, especially at centre-back. So that, yes, it's remarkable on the face of it. If any of these three seasons they'd have been sitting in the bottom three now, people wouldn't have said, "Oh, that's a big shock," you know. So it's amazing to be this high, fourth.
Okay, it's time for the game debate. The debate is Jose Mourinho. This is a bit of a cheat, chaps, because an obvious game before the weekend kicked off was we're bound to discuss Liverpool v Man United, but that just made me feel very depressed. So we can mention it as we talk about the weekend that Mourinho has had. He started making overtures to PSG. Aren't they shiny and lovely? And he's not going to spend the rest of his career at Manchester United. So let's try and work out what he's doing. There's the big picture and the smaller picture. Big picture first. Is Mourinho talking about PSG and the fact that he's already thinking about his next move in management because he's trying to negotiate a new bumper contract at Old Trafford? Or does he just get very bored very quickly? And has he already decided it's not as glittery at Old Trafford as he thought it would? Seems to me he, wherever he is, he's always looking around the corner. He's always looking for the next lovely thing. What's going on? Bill, tell me.
Yeah, it is a bit surprising because he's, on the face of it, United have improved quite a bit. Well, they have really in the year and a bit he's been there. So he should be excited about that. He should be looking forward to at least another 2 or 3 years, if not more, assuming he can stay successful. It would be a bit surprising. I suppose he is getting on. He's 54 now, and if he wants to, he's a sort of manager who would like to say at the end, look, I've won a title in all of the big five leagues. So he's done it in England with Chelsea, and in Spain with Real Madrid, and Italy with Inter Milan. Then if he goes on to PSG, well, there's a very good chance he'd win the league there, you know, and there's only one to go. So he'd, you know, and then he'd be spend the rest of his life in his dotage telling everybody that comes into his room that he's won the big five leagues. So so I guess there's that sort of attraction for him just for his CV. But
we all have dreams and we all have lists we want to complete. But do we publicly tell people we want them?
It's always good to keep your profile up, I guess, and just to show he's in the market, just to give people ideas, you know, so if next time PSG are thinking about a manager, well, they'll at least consider him, we'll consider the idea of it because he's brought it up. So I suppose in that sense, it's, you know, maybe it's a worthwhile thing for him to do.
Well, but James, it struck me as peculiar timing. There's been a lot of positive stuff coming out about the way Mourinho has got United playing well up until the game at Anfield, how he's swept through the club, he's taken down pictures of old victories and put up pictures of current players and scoring great goals. He's made it about now, not history. He's stamping his personality on the things that happen in the club. This is the Mourinho way of doing things. So when you go to training, it's different now. It's a Mourinho way of doing it. He looks like he's on a roll, that he might have, he might really push City all the way to the title if that's the way it's going to go. Why, when you've just got people on side and it looks like United are ticking along very nicely, why then do you start hinting at your next option in another country? Why would you do that?
Because he's just got over 18 months left in his contract. He wants a new deal, so he's used the press to, one day I might go to PSG or I might do this. So I think maybe Mr. Woodward will be on the phone, or we'll be seeing him today, and we'll be in touch with Mr. Mendes in Portugal to sort a new deal out. I think that's Jose's game, really, of using the press. Individuals in the press.
James, that implies that Mourinho thinks there's a possibility he won't get a new improved extension. As far as I am aware, they would like to keep him.
If he carries on as he's doing, you know, last season was a good season. This year he seems to have improved it even more. I think maybe he's just questioning and just testing the club really a little bit. What's your thoughts? Where are we going with this? You know, I need to be backed in the transfer market. I'm surprised he's only signed a 3-year contract, really. Usually, you know, David Moyes got a 15-year contract when he signed. Was it six or 7 years?
Yeah.
And to let someone like Mourinho, he certainly wouldn't be short of offers to get sort of 18 months to the end of his contract. I'm sure that'll be sorted out, and I'm sure that's just a little knock on the door in the media to get people to listen.
But you know lots of people around Old Trafford, and you know fans as well. How does that? Is he not in danger of alienating them, especially as there is still a tiny bit of doubt that he is properly part of the culture of Manchester United, that he doesn't quite fit them, and they took their time approaching him in the first place. There is a sense that he's just a little bit too pragmatic for the United tradition.
I think that was the case 3 or 4 years ago. I don't think it's the case now. I think Manchester United got to a position where they didn't have any choice but to appoint someone like Jose Mourinho, who literally does guarantee you, right, we will compete for trophies, we will win trophies, but there is baggage that comes with him. That is the controversial side. He's never far away from sort of grabbing the headlines for numerous reasons, really. And sometimes, especially, you know, we saw it at the weekend. Well, I have seen it. I've seen it twice now in the space of a year, really. But going to your biggest rivals, probably with a better team, and parking the bus and being defensive is, I'm not sure that's a Manchester United manager. But he has done very well so far, and the crowd and the fans are firmly behind him.
Yeah, Bill, you pointed out maybe it's a very good time to let people know that you could go somewhere else when your stock has risen. But I think it did plummet a little bit on Saturday at Anfield. It was a very peculiar match.
Yeah, I mean, it was. You can say it's surprising that a manager doing so well this season did that, but given it's Mourinho, he would be changing character if he hadn't done that. I mean, he did it exactly the same last year. He had, when he got to Chelsea, the first two seasons they were away to Arsenal. They had 2-0 draws. You know, it was a kind of a big rival, a regional rival, as Liverpool Manchester United is, and he just went for 2-0 draws and got it. I mean, whether it's the right thing to do, I mean, leaving aside should he be looking for a more aesthetically pleasing performance, aside from that, was it the right thing to do? I'm not sure it was. I thought Liverpool were slightly better. If they played the game 10 times, Liverpool would win it more often than United, the way the game went. They weren't massively on top, but just a little bit on top. I thought if United have gone for it more, they would probably it would have increased their chances of winning. So I don't think it was great. Poor old Lukaku, he's played reasonably well this season. He just didn't have any hope. He'd get the ball passed up to him. He was on his own. He had three players around him. And his options were either to play it straight back again to somebody, which wasn't that easy because he was surrounded, or occasionally he thought, well, I'll try and do something, hold on to it, and then it became absolutely impossible to holding on to the ball with 4 or 5 opponents around you. You're never going to do that. So I mean, it was very disappointing from a neutral point of view because it's just such a poor, dull game. But I don't think it was that surprising, and I don't think he's going to. He'll do it more than say 2 or 3 games. He would do it away to Manchester City, way to Arsenal, probably maybe Tottenham, and that's about it. All the other games, he'll be perfectly positive and attacking enough. So it's not like he's going to do it for the whole season. But yeah, it's a bit disappointing when the world is watching and it's such a damp squib.
James, do you think he was telling the truth when he said afterwards that he would have been more attacking? He was just waiting for Klopp to play more attacking players and give more space in midfield. A, do you think that's the truth? And if it is the truth, isn't that a bit peculiar that you are so passive when it comes to the tactics in a match, that what you can do nothing other than wait for your opponent to do something you've predicted they might do, and if they don't do it, then you just stay static? What was going on with that post-match stuff?
Well, I think he is twisting the truth, really, because we've seen it, especially at Liverpool. He has had success doing it, that he has time and time again gone into these games and done the same thing. Park Bussey did exactly the same last season, even more so last season. It was that to sort of rely on David De Gea again. I just feel Manchester United are probably one of 4 or 5 teams in the world that are expected to win every game. And I think he went to Liverpool, one of United's biggest rivals, and showed a bit of fear and too much, gave them far too much respect. They were a team that aren't in a great place at the moment. The manager is under a little bit of pressure, and they were there for the taking. And I think he got it wrong.
Time for some quick hits. Andy Carroll is sent off for using his elbow. Actually, I was I followed that on Twitter, and all I saw without any hashtags or anything was Carroll sent off. And I immediately knew which Carroll it was. So it says a lot, doesn't it? Andy Carroll is sent off for using his elbow twice. James, is he stupid? Unlucky? Violent?
He's a little bit silly, really, especially after the first yellow, to go for a ball that he was never going to get to. It's sort of a 20, 30% chance at best, really. And when you go for something like that, you have to leave lead with your arm, because it's only natural to do that. I just think he was silly to do that, and you know, the referee had no choice.
But if you were Bilic, how angry would you be, do you think?
With him?
Yeah.
Well, you'd be very angry. You know, you can't, you know, a player like Andy Carroll will always play like that, and you have to, you know, understand his game, and you can't deny his, you know, his determination. But without doubt, if you keep Andy Carroll on the pitch, you're 1-0 up, you'd like to think you'd see the goal, the game out. Probably costs West Ham 2 points.
Yeah. Bill, can we name the player of the season right now? Kevin De Bruyne has everyone gushing, and you were indeed gushing about him earlier.
Yes, he's been absolutely brilliant. Of course, still only 8 games gone, and we're still in the early or mid-autumn. Lots of things can change. Manchester City won the first 10 games last year, and then they fell away a bit. David Silva's not too far behind De Bruyne, I think, this season. I think there's certainly a long way to go yet, so let's not give it to him just yet.
No, but that's the point, isn't it? He's just streak at the moment. He's the gush player. Spurs won at Wembley, but only just. James, why is it taking so long for them to get comfortable there?
Because it's just not like home. I've seen Spurs this year play at Wembley in the league, and it is a million miles away from White Hart Lane, and it's so sterile. There is no atmosphere at all. I'm sure a lot of Tottenham fans will back me up on this. And they have struggled to adjust. That's a fact. They only just got over the line at the weekend as well, really. So it's going to be, you know, they have to get on with it. There's still a long way to go in this season, and they need to make, if they're going to get into the top four, they need to make Wembley a bit of a fortress, and they're not quite doing that at the moment. And I think the fans are struggling to adapt as well.
Anthony Knockhart gave Brighton the lead against Everton and celebrated with a heavy dose of emotion. What was all that about, Bill?
Yes, well, when players score, they seem to go into an emotional state where the most important things in their life come to the forefront of their mind. And for him, over the last year, he's talked a lot about the death of his father. So that, and indeed, that was on his mind when he scored yesterday. And of course, on top of that, it was his first Premier League goal. So he wants to prove to various doubters that he can do it at this level, as well as the Championship, where he played so well.
And do you think that goal is significant also because we are now going to see a more relaxed version of himself, because it was almost effortless for him last season? Maybe he's just been trying too hard.
Yes, maybe. And he wants to to tie down a place. He wasn't in the first 11 initially, but now he looks like he'll get a run in the team.
James, Paul Clement made the radical switch from 4-4-2 to 4-3-3 and defeated Huddersfield. Is it ever just that simple?
No, football's never that simple. I think they had to change something because obviously they were on not a great run of form, really. And maybe just that odd little change as well. I think Huddersfield play 4-3-3 as well. So sometimes you know, the easiest thing to do is, right, we're going to match the opposition and we're going to make it an individual battle all over the pitch, which it seems to be the case at the weekend, really. And they've come out on top, so I'm sure we'll stick to it next week.
No one seems terribly sure, Bill, if Newcastle's point at St Mary's was a bonus or a disappointment. You can have the final word on that.
I think it was a good point for them. I mean, just staying up will be success for them. They just want to stabilise. They've just come up from the Championship. They want to stabilise and build up strongly. As we've said, they've got potential to become a big six club because of their huge fan base. And a point away from Southampton. All right, Southampton have been struggling to score a lot in recent times, but they've still not been played that badly. And I think that a point away to Southampton is very good.
Alison, one for you. Can Rooney and Sigurdsson ever play in the same team?
This dilemma is making me quite angry, actually, because Ronald Koeman is watching it week in, week out, it quite clearly isn't working. When's he going to do something about it? You've got Wayne Rooney went back to Everton and he clearly thought they're a step below Manchester United, but that's okay because I'm going back to Everton and I can rule the roost. I can be the player that the team functions around. I can run the team. But you spend 45 million quid on Gylfi Sigurdsson because you're going to build a team around him. Otherwise, it makes no sense at all. And he is that sort of player. He's like Eriksen is at Spurs, quietly just makes everything tick along very nicely. All that happens now is that Rooney covers all the ground and makes all the decisions that Gylfi Sigurdsson should be making. They're literally bumping into each other at times. And I think it's probably at the kernel of what is wrong with Everton. Because if you're a team aiming for a top five finish, top six finish, which Everton are, clearly, maybe they even had top four in their sights when they spent all the money at the start of the season. You have to have a pattern of play, and Sigurdsson is just... there are two. We're talking about two players. One of them has just got smallest nation ever into the World Cup finals, and the other one doesn't play for his country anymore. Stop trying to pander to the Rooney thing, or tell him to play where he can play, which is an emergency centre forward, I suspect, and build a team around Sigurdsson. Have the courage of your £45 million convictions and sort it out, Ronald.
Do you think, and I saw this with Rooney towards the end of his Old Trafford days, he wanted to drop back into midfield, didn't he? I think he realised that he'd lost his mobility and lost his legs a little bit to go and be an out-and-out number nine. Technically, he's always been very good, and he always will be very good. And I think deep down, he wanted to do it at Old Trafford, but there wasn't. United were in transition and didn't really have the sort of time to do what they did with Giggs and moving backwards a little bit. And maybe he wants to do the same at Everton, and they can't.
He does want to do it, and he stated publicly he wants to do it. Yeah. And I'd admire his ambition to want to be that kind of player. But it's not working. It's not working when you've got a better version of that on the pitch already.
And the answer is... drop.
Drop Rooney. Or make sure when he's on the pitch, he's just playing as an out-and-out centre-forward to get on the end of a Sigurdsson set-piece. But he even takes the set-pieces. It's a joke.
Right. Not that you've got any sort of love in with Gylfi Sigurdsson at all.
I only love Gylfi Sigurdsson because he's such a great player.
That's enough for me.
And well done, Iceland.
Hi there, my name is Paddy Von Baer and I'm here with Charlie Scott.
Hello.
And we're back for our weekly update from The Sweeper, which is Time Sports' free fantasy football tipping service. You can sign up at thetimes.co.uk/fantasyfootball and you'll receive an email every Friday morning packed full of advice and other such goodness.
Yeah, so last week we tipped Raheem Sterling for Man City's game against Stoke, and he was the top scoring player in that game with a goal, two assists and two bonus points as they won 7-2. And he's the top scoring player in the game week so far, ahead of Leicester West Brom tonight. We also tipped Christian Eriksen to produce the goods for Tottenham against Bournemouth, and he did just that with a goal and three bonus points. Pascal Gross for Brighton yesterday was great, picking up an assist. And then Alfie Mawson for Swansea was helped them keep a clean sheet in their 2-0 win against Huddersfield. And then one of Mawson's teammates, who we've been backing, we backed Mawson this week, but we've been on Tammy Abraham's case all year. He was great, scored both goals and picked up all three bonus points. He got 13 points, and at 5.7 million, it was a brilliant option as a third striker.
Of course, when you sign up to The Sweeper, you'll also have access to our mini league. The highest scoring team so far this week is Ngawi FC, managed by Chandra Retnaning. Hopefully I've pronounced that all right. He used his bench boost superbly, with Raheem Sterling coming on as the first sub to help him to 91 points. The league's also littered with some former champions, and Matthew Martiniak is certainly making some moves. He's into the top 100,000 after a 58-point week, and he looks set for another challenge on the title. And Matt Dickinson is one of our esteemed writers, and there's a handful of them in the league as well. He picks up 63 points with Jamie Vardy still to come tonight at the time of recording. So good stuff, Dicko.
Yeah, and tomorrow after tonight's game, we'll have the recap of the week, which will go up on the website tomorrow morning, where we'll be looking at Crystal Palace. Are they back? Has Roy got them playing? Wilfred Zaha played his first game since the first game of the season. He's 6.7 million and classed as a midfielder, but he was playing as a central striker, basically, as they beat Chelsea 2-1. And his 15 touches in the penalty area was only matched by Raheem Sterling for City against Stoke. They've also got Newcastle and West Ham coming up next, so we'll look at that. And also Southampton, who were back in the goals, but sadly conceded two. We'll see if there's any value in them going forward.
So remember, that is thetimes.co.uk/fantasyfootball. It's free to sign up, and you, of course, get access to the mini league and all sorts of our tips, hints and advice.
That's it for now. Many, many thanks to my guests today, Bill Edgar and James Scowcroft. Remember, it's just £8 for an 8-week trial. Just search The Times online. And this season, you can access highlights of every game in the Premier League, Champions League, Europa League and the FA Cup. Gab will be back in the chair next week to pick over the bones of Spurs versus Liverpool.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.